Very happy to be here this evening, and I thank you for inviting me. Kitty Sorrow would have been here with me tonight as well, but he just got back from a one-week wilderness retreat with 200 young people in Chattanooga, Tennessee, so I don't think he was feeling quite up for an evening out, but he sends his regards to those who know him. So it's very valuable, isn't it, to be able to come together, make the effort to come out of our daily routines, to come together to practice, because it's very clear we can't do this, or very few people can do this practice on their own, that we need the support of each other, because it's actually quite challenging to remember to come back to something that's very simple, which is the free heart, the free space of the heart in the midst of what can sometimes feel like very overwhelming and sometimes even crushing conditions and circumstances that can flood us and overwhelm us. And when that happens, we forget that actually here and now, in any moment, there's always the possibility of returning through even the very simple practice, as we were doing tonight, of being with a few breaths and steadying and taking attention inward, that it's possible to return back to a place of balance, what feels like core sanity in a world gone mad. I'm sure every age, every generation feels that. We've all gone mad, but it seems particularly the case in our times. And it can be very activating in terms of being engaged, as we all are living within the very complex circumstances of our contemporary world. So all of that can activate us and activate the heart and overwhelm us. And so, as one of the Thai forest masters, Ajahn Tate, said, that actually the point of the practice is to understand the difference between what moves through the heart and the heart itself. This is the heart-mind, jitta, heart-mind, that which is the heart-mind. Jitta is a dimension of the heart-mind that is unmoving, untroubled, unreactive, and then there is that which moves through the space of awareness, moves through the space of the heart, that activates us, that impinges and that leaves an impression. So another great forest master, Ajahn Mahabua, said this: the hindrances are capable of ruining many things, but they can't destroy the heart. Although they may bring the heart experiences of hardship and suffering, they can't possibly annihilate it. The heart, by its very nature, is both constant and undying. So the aim of the practice is to recognize this ultimate refuge, to remember that we even have this as a refuge, because we forget. We forget every day. That's why the practice of mindfulness, sati, literally means to remember or to come back or to gather back again. And the more we forget, the more we get spun out, the more we sort of get a little crazy, and we keep consuming, we keep trying to feel that inner ache, that inner void of the loss of our heart. And it's a very painful condition, and we all experience that almost every day to some degree or the other, losing touch with our core sane well-being and kind of getting into that mode of being driven and moving out from the core, from a sense of centrality, into the circumference of the mind as it spins out in ever widening circles, trying to make sense of it all, trying to place ourselves within the complexity of life. And yet, even a very small gesture like this evening, coming together and spending half an hour just being with the breath, being with the sensations of the body. This is the first foundation of mindfulness. Is really like the royal road back. You know, the practice. This is we practice coming home, coming back again and again, and realizing that when we don't do that, then we set up the causes for this experience of agitation and suffering and reactivity. There's a very profound teaching and a beautiful teaching that I've sort of been sitting with and working with now for quite a while. It's a teaching that's on a friend of ours before we left England to go to South Africa to work in 94. They made a calligraphy of this particular teaching, so it's on our wall in our little house at Dharmagiri, our small centre in the Drakensberg in South Africa. And so I sort of passed this teaching a lot on the wall, and, you know, like all things on the wall, you forget what they're really saying. When there's at least like wise sayings you put down, they just become part of the backdrop. But then we decided to teach a retreat on it because it really, you know, to teach these teachings really helps one practice them. And then to stay with them and keep contemplating. This teaching is called the Mula Sutta, the Root Sutta, and it comprises of 10 lines. And it's a practice and a sort of contemplation in a very pithy way of this journey of bringing ourselves back from the state of lostness, from the state of what's called samsara, that endless sort of thirsting and wandering and moving out back home. And brings us to understand that in every circumstance, whatever the circumstance, that there's always freedom. So this sutta begins, Chandamulaka Aveso Sabbe Dhamma, which Chandamulaka, which is like rooted in chanda, this word, sometimes it's translated as desire, rooted in desire, but it really means something like interest. Rooted in interest are all things, and Manisikara Sambhava Savedama, the second line, born of attention are all things. So these first two lines are very powerful because they're talking about how we experience our world. Our experience of the world is dependent on these two activities of the jitta, of the mind. This interest or chanda, sometimes it can be sort of moves out from just a sense of interest into that energy that we can call chanda, is more like a enthusiasm sometimes. It kind of has a positive sense in it. Sometimes in Buddhism the word desire tends to have a little bit more of a negative connotation, the desire that drives us on. But it's this movement, something catches our interest and we get sort of, and connected with that movement of the mind, there is a tension. Our attention follows that movement. So if we're, in a very simple way, if we're thinking about the past or the future, or we start worrying about something, or we're sort of cogitating over a situation, then our attention has been drawn and from to that process, and that process becomes our world. It's not like we create the world and mountains and the oceans and everything, but it becomes our world. If my attention looks out, I see that world there, and if my attention looks there, there's that world there. So attention upon attention starts to designate and give birth to this experience of world, of all things, you know, the phenomena. And within phenomena, there is the experience of me experiencing that. So there's a me that starts to arise, me in relationship to that, into this world. But it's not really a world that we've investigated, but we've assumed. We've already assumed a premise that we start to operate on, that there's this world that's come to be, that we think has just emerged, but we haven't perhaps noticed clearly enough that it's emerged because we've put attention there, or unconsciously volition moves us, through the habit of the mind moves us in a certain way, and then that world gives rise to a sense of a me experiencing that world. And it's that sort of very fulcrum, that kind of core subject or object fulcrum that begins to generate the reactivity of the mind. Sense of me caught or attracted to or sort of in some sort of complex relationship with the sense of what we've brought our attention to. And then sometimes we don't get further than that without starting to spin out of you know, this sense of being more perhaps empowered to really understand what's going on. We just become almost like a little bit of a victim of whatever, wherever the mind has been attracted to. As soon as attention, as soon as there's a sense of me and this world arising, then there's this third line, pasa mudaya, sabbe dhamma means there's, pasa is contact. Pasa, and then vedana samasarana, which means that feeling, contact and feeling arise. So converging on feeling, arising on contact. So the sense of attention goes to, you know, like maybe before I came here tonight, I didn't know what to expect. When you don't know what to expect, you can get a little anxious. Mm-hmm. So the mind goes Marin Sangha, and then I've probably got some perceptions around that. There's some interest, maybe some trepidation. There's a sense of me and an it. And as that starts to arise and coalesce around something that becomes, you know, in time, and this is going to happen soon, there's sort of more energy around it. There's a sense of me in contact with, at the moment, my projected it, because I am not really with the Marin Sangha. But as one starts to come into contact with that, then there's also a feeling tone. You know, maybe I feel excited, maybe I feel anxious. And usually that all happens very quickly. We bring attention and feeling arises. And then feeling generates a lot of reactivity. Often what we feel, I feel horrible, I feel good. I want to go to this because I want to feel in a certain way, or I want to move away from something else. So there's a lot of very complex strategies to help us avoid feeling what we don't want to feel. Which is why it's really hard to meditate. Because when we when we meditate, especially when we've been on that roll the whole day and we actually stop and our attention isn't sort of in a state of being sort of moving from one thing to another, and it's just like come to your breath, it's like, oh, you don't feel so easy to do that. But it's really important to do that, because it begins, even though it's hard, and often we're with an accumulation of undigested feeling tone that we might experience as some sort of dukkha, stress. It's really important, because that, and that actually training of attention, this is where the mindfulness comes, in the third and fourth lines of these 10-lined, pithy, sort of arising and dissolving of the whole world statement of the Buddha. We have the whatever's felt, whatever's arising, whatever's experienced becomes a focal point of what's called samadhi or concentration or intensity. But at that point, it's at that point there can be either the spinning out into the reactivity, to being lost, to going into all sorts of assumptions and narrative and stories, which might have, for example, nothing to do with the reality of Marin Sangha. It's just my own mind. Maybe I have a memory from the past. Maybe I have a perception about what I might think. You know, but it's not very real. But at that point, when that's all happening in the fifth line of this teaching, when there's rooted in interest, born of attention, arising on contact, converging in feeling, intensifying or headed by concentration, which means things start to concentrate into and becoming a sort of phenomena, has a reality to it, then there's the possibility, rather than spinning out, of this next line is satadipateya sabbe dhamma, which means dominated or ruled by mindfulness of all things. So at this point, then, rather than going into the reactivity and the stories and the feeling tones and the fear and the anxiety or the planning or the speculation, there's a moment of mindfulness. There's a moment of interrupting that syndrome and breaking set of going in, you know, this mindful, the English translation of to remember to be here in a different way, to remember to come back, you know, to this moment in a very simple way, to take a breath, and in that, in a way, it's like a really radical thing to do because it interrupts this incredible structure of me in this narrative and in this sort of world that I have generated, that the mind has generated for me. But often within that world there's not a lot of freedom. So we find ourselves moving around that space, trying to kind of think the right thought, get the right feeling, get the right construct, so that sense of me in the middle of it can feel it's okay. But then if you've noticed, you can do that for a certain amount of time, and then something pops out and it interrupts and undermines that whole sense of I've got it all together. So we're constantly sort of like trying to get it all together. And the all doesn't want to get together, it just keeps slipping all over the place. Yeah. So there's this sort of feeling of, you know, trying to like pull stuff together and it doesn't come together. So it's frustrating, it's this, you know, like, but it will come together. If I can only blah blah blah, you know, we know that syndrome. But actually what really needs to happen in that moment, mostly, it's not to say that we don't strategize or have plans, but what really needs to come together in that moment is a moment of mindful being. A mindful being, just to be willing to stop and steady within the process. Return to the breath, this beautiful teaching, the first foundation of training the mind to remove itself from its habits, you know, from its longing, from its grief, from its upset, from its anxiety, from its disappointment for what the world brings to us. You know, so we're not just cycling in those through those avenues of thought and narrative and feeling tone. So it interrupts, mindfully remembering to withdraw the mind from that and bring it, in the teaching it says, to make mindfulness in front. It means like primary, to make it the primary activity or path activity. And then how do we do that? We bring attention to the breath. First foundation, breathing in long, breathing in a deep breath, maybe tracking the fullness of the breath. It's not very, you know, ecstatic or exciting, maybe it's not very dramatic, but it's very profound. It's the very meditation that when the Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha to be, when he'd gone through his extreme practices of trying to crush the world to get beyond it, or when he'd gone through pathways of pleasure to try and extract as much as he could to fill that gnawing gap, and he tried all of those and it didn't work, it was actually the memory he had of being a child and doing this practice of being with the breath that set him on the middle path to then the night of his awakening. That was an important memory that came, an important thing that set him into that practice, where he realized this practice is, there's nothing harmful in this practice. This pleasure from this practice is a good pleasure. It's something to follow. So to mindfully feel with the breath, to mindfully, and the breath starts off is that coarse sensation, maybe, of the inhalation and the exhalation. You feel it as the rhythm of the breath, the entry of the breath through the nostrils down to the belly, maybe feeling that whole pathway of the breath, maybe feeling some area of the breath energy which is actually sensation. So the breath energy is also the experience of sensation in the body. This is part of the whole of the breath energy. So taking attention. So the attention is not then creating imagined worlds or being pulled by, you know, the momentum of this chanda energy of interest, desire, speculation, habit, or pulled into the sort of vortex of anxiety when you keep trying to figure things out. But the attention is being trained to a very real present moment experience, which is an embodiment. It's very profound because most of the time we're very unembodied, disembodied, disassociated, and have a very great difficulty sometimes coming into our embodiment because it's not necessarily an easy place to be. But it is the place that where the Buddha begins the training of awakening. To the extent that we can. So sometimes we might come into the breath and maybe it feels not that comfortable, but we can perhaps be with the sensations of the palms of the hands or the soles of the feet when we're walking. That's that sensation, that movement is still the vayo dhatu, still, you know, it's not outside the breath energy. Still being aware of that which is moving and that we experience that as very grounding sensation. So this is the training. This is the training again and again. Very patient because we forget, we get pulled out, we get overwhelmed. Again and again. Ruling by mindfulness. Ruling by mindful inquiry. Ruling by mindful panuttara sabbe dhamma. The next line is surmounted by wisdom, sabbe dhamma, which means all things. So at that point, instead of getting into the reactive mode, why this, why that, what should I do about it, I don't like it, it shouldn't be like this, I want it to be another way. If you've noticed, at a certain point in life we realise, oh, that is a state that I'm often caught in, and yet we believe it so much, if only... It shouldn't be this way, it should be another way, could be another way. I remember one of our friends in the monastery talking about when Ajahn Chah came to see him when he was very upset because he'd gotten ill, and he kept saying, he was in hospital, and he kept saying to Ajahn Chah, it shouldn't be like this, it shouldn't be like this. And Ajahn Chah leaned over and said, well, if it shouldn't be like this, it wouldn't be like this. You know, this is how things are, and it shouldn't be, it really shouldn't be like it is. I can really tell you how it shouldn't be. I know we shouldn't have global warming, we shouldn't have a crazy election cycle, we shouldn't have the world going to hell in a handbasket, which seems to be. And, you know, we should try and do everything we can to stop all that happening, but this is how it is. You know, this is, so it's not a sort of resignation. It's not a abdication, but it's a reality coming into reality, first of all, with how it is, before we then respond, or hopefully respond rather than react. And so the mindful, being present to that training with the breath and coming to what is actually happening here, and not only ruled by mindfulness of all things, but surmounted by wisdom. And mindfulness is always, Yoni Sammanisakkara is always married. This word, Manisakkara, is always married with investigation. What's happening here, actually? Yeah. Because I've constructed a world, and I'm living in that world, and I'm in the centre of it. If you notice, it's always the me in the centre of the worlds we construct or we find ourselves in some state of drama or the other. So who is this me and what is this world and what is the dynamic that's going on that feels out of control and I'm trying to manage it? So mindfulness, mindfully slowing it down, taking some deep breaths and investigating, surmounted by wisdom of all things. And the breath can really help us in this way, because at first the breath is something we steady attention on, and then it can become a really profound teaching about the nature of reality, the nature of all things, because if we try and find the breath, as a noun, the breath, we realize that it's, constantly eluding us as a concrete, substantial, core kind of thing we can get hold of. It's not to say that it's not real enough. We stop breathing, we'll know how real the breath is. But we can't actually, it eludes us, we can't hold it. So mindfulness with wisdom, mindfulness couples with wisdom, is to study and to really look what's happening here. First of all, we can, something very simple like the breath. We can notice as we breathe in, we can breathe out. It's constantly in this flow, in this change. It's pressure, sensation, fluid. So that gives us a hint, that begins to give us an inkling into something that we assume, we might have even said it's my breath. It's not even the breath, but it's my breath. And that gets a bit more personal. And so, we start to investigate and see that actually this breath is changing. So what else is changing? If we get more to feeling feels extremely personal, doesn't it? So especially if we've got very strong feeling going on, painful feeling, something's upset us, someone's upset us, and we can be very right to feel upset, and there can be something we need to do about that. It's not denying that, or maybe what we feel has a very deep sort of psychodynamic process within it that's important to investigate, and that's one journey that's also very valuable. But in the moment, when we're caught up, we can also do a lot about being in relationship to feeling, not to deny it or squash it, but to actually enter into feeling from a place of investigation and inquiry. What is felt here? And to bring that awareness as attention to the breath, and awareness starts to receive. Its nature is receptive. So it's receiving what it's experienced rather than trying to always control and push things around. It's a very deep receptive listening. Another way we could talk about mindfulness, to deeply receive what is, say, for example, what is felt. And that in and of itself can be actually very healing. And the story about that I sometimes use is a very wonderful documentary that was made by a French crew that went to Outer Mongolia and lived with a tribal peoples for a while that were camel herders. I don't know if you saw that, the camel, that weeping camel. When they were, the camel had given birth to, and the birth was very traumatizing and painful, and because of that the mother camel rejected the calf, and it was a problem for the tribal family, the nomadic family, because they had to move with the animals to go and graze somewhere, so they were trying all many ways to get this calf to suckle, but the mother kept rejecting the calf because she associated the calf with a lot of pain. So they went to get the wise person from the local village, the teacher, the shaman, and he came with his stringed instrument, and he got the family to sit there by the mother camel, and he just started to play, and he just started to intone like a chant, play the music, and then the mother, the human mother, went up to the mother camel, and just about where her heart was, she just put her hand, just touching very gently, started to singing to the camel. And at a certain point, you just see the camel start to cry, these tears, and just like the trauma comes out, and it's finished, it's finished. And then the baby's born, the baby suckles, and they all move on. It's not a, in their world, it's not a big deal. It's, you understand the power of focused awareness when it's not refracted, and attention when it's not sort of dispersed into a million things, as it starts to this, headed by concentration, when that concentration isn't going out into what has to happen or what did happen, when it starts to focalize around body and breath, then the mind itself starts to unify within the body. The body starts to enjoy the infusion of the luminosity of the mind, and the mind starts to steady on the slow rhythm of the body. The sort of energy gathering, and that receptive gathered awareness is, you know, brought in relationship to, say, what is felt. So it's very has its own intelligence, in the same way as that collective awareness brought to that mother camel helped activate a moment of healing, a moment of release. So to feel the feeling, as the Buddha said in the second foundation, to feel the feeling in the feeling, to know this is just feeling, but not to do that as like it's just feeling, bam. Or just because sometimes there's something important in what is felt for us to hear or understand or heal, but to not be overwhelmed by that feeling, to know we can train the mind to know. And I find this very, very helpful. Someone that feels a lot all the time and gets very activated by what is felt, a very porous system, to, you know, sometimes being in a, you know, we interpret it all very personally. Oh God, I feel terrible. Without realizing, well, maybe what's felt is just actually a part of the collective, part of what's happening to the earth, a part of what's going down in the family, or part of what's happening in the room, you know. So to depersonalize, and the feeling is just the feeling. You know, it's just this much. So the Buddha said sometimes feelings are like, it's like you have a guest house, and various feelings come and go. Pleasant, unpleasant, painful, anxious, lovely, pleasing, fraught. But when they come, they can feel like they've been there forever, they're going to be there forever. They become overwhelming, they become, when we don't have any, they're not infused with that awareness, intelligence, they become solidified, we're reacting, we're repressing. So to free the feeling nature by feeling the feeling in the feeling, whatever the feeling tone is, we begin to see, already begin to see, like the breath, that actually what is felt is also lacking in any real solidity. It's not something that ultimately we're owning or can grasp. It's one of these visitors coming, arising. And in this moment, it's just this much. Just to be with this much. Because when you feel terrible, you can think, oh God, it's always like this. It's always going to be like this. And I'm a basket case because I feel this. So it's just... it's just unpleasant feeling. And it's just this much. And all I have to do is just be here with that in this moment. And then create a big, horrible self that's forever condemned. And then we have some agency and some capacity to investigate. What is this? And to be interested. So that interest then, that's generally creating all these worlds that we then populate with our imagination, that interest is then in service of reality, in service of attention, guided by attention to what's actually happening here and now. Here and now, bringing attention, breathing here and now. What is felt, what is we need to be with, and then within that, in this next line, it says whatever emerges, whether it's mental phenomena, feeling tones, circumstances, conditions, whatever the circumstance, vimuti sarasabe dhamma. This is the eighth line of this ten pithy line teaching of the Buddha, of the Mula Sutta. It's a very important line because vimuti means freedom. Vimuti sarasabe dhamma. Sara means essence. So the essence of sabbe dhamma, of all thingness, all things, all worlds, all circumstances is actually already free. It's already free because it's not as compounded and as stuck and as solidified as we imagine it to be, unless we make it so. It's free because it's a constructed happening. And then when you see, you're ruled by mindfulness, dominated by insight, by wisdom, when you see into the core of every moment, you realize it's a constructed phenomena that's already beginning to deconstruct itself. It's already in motion, it's already moving, it's already fluid, it's already deconstructing itself. It's a momentary arising that then the mind perpetuates. But in each moment when you see clear, you just realize experience phenomena is like touching the awareness, arising and passing, arising and passing. The awareness itself is already free. The heart's already free. And it's through seeing this that then the Buddha said, Amatogata Sabbe Dhamma, it's because all things are arising because of conditioning, that actually at the heart of every circumstance there's already freedom, already space, that all things are also dissolving. Amatogata, amato is that which doesn't die. Amatogata Sabbe Dhamma. All things are arising from the ground of awareness of the mind, pure mind. So Ajahn Mahabhua called the indestructible mind, heart. We're all arising from this knowing heart and dissolving back into presence, moment by moment. So all things find their home, find their resting place. And when we're aware and present to all things, they rest back in our awareness. They find their home, they find their completion. We find their death. We allow them to die into the deathless. We allow them to finish. We allow things to finish so that they can be freed. Because we know that ultimately what is comes together deconstructs, and what is really free has always been free. It's not going to be lost. We don't have to grasp it because it's our primary nature. So Amatogata Sabbe Dhamma, all things are dissolving back into that, into their own nature, which is not dying, which is not going anywhere, which is not transient. Nibbanam Pariyosana Sabbe Dhamma, all things terminate, finish, find their completion in what the Buddha called Nibbana, and peace. So in our practice, hindrances are capable of ruining many things. Our practice is to recognize, yes, there are hindrances, there are things that come and impact the heart, that activate us, their own, others, the world, a lot of stuff impacts. And some of it's not that easy to be with. But to know that we're just in each moment, this practice, what I really find important to remember, because one loses it so much, one gets upset so much, or I get upset so much. I'm sort of like a walking internal disaster zone sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, but I don't take it too personally. But it is the ground of practice. You know, it's not that everything is just nicely all sort of lined up all the time. Sometimes there's a lot happening because it's not personal either. You know, we're in a web of life. What's felt, what's experienced is moving through us, especially when we're open. And so what's felt and what's moving through us is complex, conflicted, connected with difficult feelings sometimes, connected with a lot of mental complexity and proliferation. But all of that's the ground, all of that becomes the ground for moments of mindful awareness, moments of practice, moments of noticing what's happening now, feeling in the feeling. And I just have to be with just this much, that's all that's ever asked of us in this practice. If we think of it, oh God, I'm going to be this huge thing to be enlightened or whatever, I don't know if anyone believes in that anymore, but anyway, the myth of enlightenment, but Anyway, there is this thing, this realization. It can sound like a really big kind of like lifetime's deal, you know, to struggle away, and then we interpret that all through the personality, the me that has to, without realizing the very premise that we assume that from is already erroneous, you know, that there's a me that's going to get somewhere. So, you know, just to mindfully be with the breath, come back home, and you know, that coming back home is it's a process really of stripping away, it's not of getting things. It's always a process of letting things be freed, letting things return to where they need to return to resolve back into the present, aware heart, to trust that, to trust we don't have to hold on so tightly to it all, because we're not going to fix it all. It's never going to be right. We do what we can, you know, but we, you know, need it to allow ourselves to also know how to put the Dzogchen Child would say once when he was walking with his disciples and he saw these big boulders and he pointed to them and said, "Are they heavy?" And they said, "Oh yes, Lumpur, they're very, very heavy." He said, "Well, they're not if you don't pick them up." So we're learning to put down the boulders every day. We pick up all these boulders and you know, so we thought, "God, it's so bloody heavy." So we said, "Let's just pull out these boulders and put them down again. Put them down again and come back to this," like that shaman in the outer reaches of Mongolia, just being aware and present and allowing the healing and the health and the sanity to move from that space, the intelligence of the Dharma to move through us. Because that's what starts to happen when we're not trying to control it all, is that something else can move through us. This deeper, this awareness is the Dharma, this mind, unhindered, undying, is the intelligence of the living Dharma. So we listen into it, we allow it to move through us, it guides us. And it moves in mysterious ways. Dzogchen Cha said, "Do everything with a mind that lets go. Do not expect praise or reward. If you let go a little, you will have a little peace. If you let go a lot, you will have a lot of peace. If you let go completely, you will know complete peace and freedom. Your struggles with the world will have come to an end."